another episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations. I'm Elizabeth Irwin.
I'm Gwen Hoffman.
I'm Dawn Keatley.
And on today's episode, we are going all in on the criminally underrated Piranha franchise. Joe Dante's 1978 Ode to Bloodthirsty Piranhas was initially dismissed by critics as being a B-movie ripoff of Jaws. But considered as a whole, the franchise, which is made up of five films, is a glorious descent into exploitation territory, consisting of serious questions of conservation and boobs. Lots and lots of boobs. This is our biggest deep dive yet, so stay tuned. Okay, guys, so we have a lot of Piranha territory to cover. We're going to start with Piranha 1978. Just to give everyone a little synopsis, two teenagers, they go missing, and a skip tracer by the name of Maggie teams up with a local drunk guy by the name of Paul to investigate. They stumble upon an abandoned military installation, and Maggie decides to empty the pool, unknowingly releasing a scientifically engineered school of lethal piranha. And as you would expect, chaos ensues. Discuss.
I do love that one of the first lines in the film is, let's get wet.
Well,
I mean, you have the two teenagers just going out. I guess they were trying to camp at first. And then they ducked into that military, you know, testing area. They find this fantastic pool that's just pristine.
Oh, wow. And anyone in their right mind would go swimming.
In a military testing. Teenage
we're
judgment.
We're going to jump in here.
Yeah,
it really shows teenage brains are not yet developed.
But I also just love that they, let's get wet. And I feel like that sentiment kind of trickles into the rest of the films, probably more so than anything else from this film.
Well, I just have to, it's funny that you should say that, Gwen, and we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but in Piranha 3DD from 2012, I actually wrote in my notes that it is crazy the number of times someone says the word wet. And it's just like wet over and over. And I never realized that it was the first line of the original.
So it links the franchise.
There's a line of continuity here.
Yeah. But even like by the way that this film opens up, you know, you got everybody getting naked and getting wet. You think that it's going to kind of go down as more of your exploitation horror, which, you know, we're going to talk about another time. But it really doesn't. It really just kind of captured it in the beginning. And then it went into a pretty decent film.
I love Piranha 1978.
I mean, love might be strong for me, but I do like it. No, I do love it.
I liked it. Until I watched all of the other films.
Well, yeah, we're definitely going to disagree on our implicit rankings of the films, which will be emerging during the course of this conversation. But yeah, Piranha 1978 is at the top of my list. And I guess it says something about me. I mean, I like it because it's intelligent and, intelligent. I guess I should put that in quotation marks. Intelligent within the framework of the Piranha franchise and also political. I think it's the most political of the films. And actually, I want to get to something that you said, Liz. You said it was sort of a ripoff of Jaws.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You say that? Yeah. Like, do we think it is? I mean, Jaws was 3 years earlier. I actually think this may be better than Jaws.
I'm definitely going to say this is better than Jaws.
Okay.
Gwen.
I don't know if I can do it.
I mean,
the only thing that kind of pushes it a little bit beyond Jaws is, you know, piranhas start biting small children. But no, I think I'm just in love with the legacy of Jaws. And maybe I'm having a hard time getting past that.
So. I mean, I'm biased anyway, because I think Jaws is highly overrated. I don't understand why people love it so much.
The film itself, maybe. But I think just the kind of memory that it left behind.
Yeah, there's a lot of cultural capital that I do appreciate, but I just don't like the actual movie.
We're reveling in like real horror here and, you know, veering on the exploitative. We're not going to talk about, we vowed we wouldn't talk about trauma, grief.
Nope, no trauma, grief.
Or abuse.
I might need just one moment. Just a little.
But I guess watching Piranha in that light made me realize that, Jaws takes off into the male buddy film. It gets very serious. It's about sort of, it develops the psychology of the three main male characters. Piranha never takes that turn. It just like goes straight into like horror and blood and gore. And there's a strong female character who's part of Piranha from beginning to end. There's actually two, because as well as Maggie, who releases the Piranha and then tries to contain them, there's also the scientist mm-hmm. who seems to have been involved also in creating the Piranha. So we have sort of female-centered bloody horror versus the sort of male buddy psychological drama of Jaws.
And I think that Jaws is so much more of a slow building dread. And I think you're right. With Piranha, it's this pressured, looming, we need to do something about this right now, right now, yeah. right now. Let's hop in the car, go Roscoe Pico train, jumping over the hills and stuff like that and getting there because we've got to save these kids. We've got to get to the resort. We've got to.
Yeah.
And I love, too, that kind of building on your point about it being like horror, like true horror. I mean, right in the very, very beginning, first you see them paying homage to Jaws because she's playing the video game and they start talking about Creature from the Black Lagoon. I think at least twice, maybe throughout the film.
Yeah.
And I like that. It's kind of firmly placing itself in the middle of it.
So that does open up the question of whether or not you guys consider this to be a parody film, because all the reviews yeah. refer to it specifically in that way. And I would argue it's not because I don't think it's really deconstructing anything. It's just reflecting Jaws' sensibility.
No, I agree with you. I think we were talking just a little bit ahead of time before we started the podcast. The only thing that puts it into parody for me is that super weird claymation fish that just kind of walks through the scientist or the military base and peers around beakers once in a while.
I feel like that's just because they probably spent all their money on like blow.
Mushrooms. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a parody because it does deal with serious things like you were saying, Dawn, you know, the military and politics. And, you know, I think that with those strong female leads, that's definitely the women's liberation. She's a 70s woman.
Yeah, definitely a 70s.
But let's talk about Maggie, because I found her outrageously obnoxious. The fact that she goes into this military installation and feels like she has the right to be there. And
why not?
Because it's not her property.
Well, she bursts into Paul Grogan's cabin first, and then she bursts into the military whatever and just like drains the
swamp.
After this really bizarre fight sequence between the two guys and herself, which actually seems like a real fight sequence as opposed to the 1995 remake that we will get to. But there was just something about her attitude that really just rubbed me the wrong way.
But she saved all those little blonde white kids, Liz.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Did she? I mean, she did a lot of running
around. They didn't die.
They
just got
a lot of saving.
But she caused the issue because she released them into the wild to eat all these children.
Which exposed a huge military cover-up, which I think we needed to know about anyway.
Well, you could probably have exposed that cover-up without, you know, making, what was it like that? Like hundreds of people die?
I think for me, it was less about the fact that she released them, which I'm sure some people could say, oh, there's another woman just, you know, causing havoc.
Acting first, thinking later.
Yeah, being emotional. But on the other hand, too, I think if it wasn't prefaced by the lines where Paul was like, you can't do that, you need permission. She was like, no, I don't. Doop.
But she did need permission. It wasn't her property.
Theoretically, yes, she needed permission. But I just
Are you looking at subtext?
The way that it was framed, I liked it because she was like, I don't need permission for nothing. Like, I'm doing this.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely consistent with, like, women's liberation of the time period. Yeah. I'll give it that. But it still just really annoyed me.
And I just love that she's just knew how to handle prison. Like, all of a sudden, they get locked up. And this chick, she just kicks out the plumbing.
That was awesome.
Smashes the ceramic, wraps it up like batteries in a sock, and then lures this guy in and whacks him over the head. I was like, wow, that's Orange is the New Black before it even was Orange is the New Black. I loved her for that.
Yeah. So, and I also have to say that one of the things I liked about it was it's, and this is in relation to Jaws again, is that we've sort of talked about this a little bit. Aside from the strong female lead, I think it actually has a much stronger political message than Jaws. And Bruce Colwyn wrote a review of Piranha. And I guess at one point he met Joe Dante, who said, like, dude, like, you wrote one of the only positive reviews of that film. But Bruce Colwyn has this thing that he says it's much more intelligent than Jaws. Because in Jaws, and I had thought about this, when I was watching it, like in Jaws, the shark, I mean, people think about Jaws as a revenge of nature film, but we never know that for sure. In the first one, the shark just starts attacking for no reason that's ever explained. In Piranha, it is the government's fault.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's government-funded scientific research done to destroy people and their river system, the North Vietnamese. I mean, this is wholly a human-made problem, and it's about sort of corruption because, yeah, then they try to cover it up without actually getting rid of it. The government knows that the piranha are up there and don't do anything about it. So it's like a complete condemnation of the government.
And try to actively cover it up, too. Remember when they were calling it ahead to, like, newspapers and news stations?
Yeah.
And like, you might get some prank calls.
Yeah.
That it's not real. It's not real.
That's a really good point. And from that context, it also does make Maggie's motivations a little bit more palatable, I guess, because if this is really sort of a metaphor for Vietnam, then you do want people trespassing against sort of the military establishment.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're not in the immediate post-Vietnam era here, but Bruce Cohen says that it's a film that, quote, assumes that its audience absolutely distrusts the government.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that is part of what Maggie is kind of responding to when she's in this, like, military test site.
Yeah.
She's kind of like, F the government, F the military.
Yeah.
I'm draining this pool / swamp.
And now the piranhas are unleashed.
Yeah.
Too bad.
Well, they even kind of... they frame it, I think, when the colonel and that female scientist were talking at some point, they were like, oh, well, if we have to, you know, poison the water, we'll poison the water. And they were like, some things are more important than people's lives.
Right.
And I think that really sums up what they were trying to get at, that how the military might view things.
Yeah.
At that time period.
I would agree with that.
And I think they went, you know, all in trying to make the military people appear quite crotchety. Callous.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And
I mean, if this evokes like 50s creature films, which I think it does, and then there are the explicit references to Creature from the Black Lagoon. Oh, and obviously, you know, Kevin McCarthy from Invasion of the Body Snatchers, he plays this scientist that's been working at the military compound, and he comes across as a little crazy. So the film evokes that. But in those films, the military was always the good guy in the end. Like here, the military is completely the ones to blame.
What did you guys think about where the film leaves Paul? Because at the end, he's in this catatonic state.
Awesome.
Yeah, I thought so, too. And that, to me, is kind of what pushed it over the edge past Jaws.
Yeah.
Because it seems...
there's no happy ending.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I was more hopeful that he would have died because he's the one I found quite annoying.
Really? More than Maggie?
Oh, yeah. Maggie didn't annoy me at all. He was just kind of like a dish rag. No, he was just limp, you know? He didn't serve much of a purpose.
He
was just this weird tag-along. He couldn't even make a good raft.
Well, he was drunk and he didn't even want to be
there.
He was
drunk the whole time.
That's because Maggie came storming into his house and was like, yo, you and I are going.
Yeah,
and that cleaned him up because then he left his booze at the house.
Well, he should have kept his booze and
he
would still be alive.
And then he'd have a little more personality.
That's the message.
Drink more, you have a personality?
Yes, live off the grid and drink more.
Yeah, there you go. Because I just found him to be boring. So when the piranhas were attacking him, I was kind of like, okay, well, I hope that he gets everything open, but I kind of hope they pull him out dead.
They signal that Paul Grogan's still alive when his hand, like, reaches up out of the water, which really evokes the ending of Carrie, Carrie's hand comes up through the grave, and also Deliverance. There's and that was earlier than this, too, I think, which also ends with a hand sort of sticking up in the water. I was really, you know, there are sort of two endings to the original Piranha. And the first one is when Paul is like injured and catatonic and isn't speaking. And his daughter is right by him, like looking at him anxiously. And he can't reassure her, like, because he's too traumatized by what's happened. Like, that kind of makes it real, like the trauma of the piranha.
Oh, you mentioned that first.
Dun, dun,
trauma.
It wasn't
trauma.
Me. Yes.
I have a drinking game here.
Seal is broken.
But it is, like, it's an ending in trauma. And maybe that is about Vietnam, too. Like, the fracturing of families because men are so traumatized.
I mean, watching this film with, like, a 2019 eye, And watching how his daughter was raised, and I was like, boy, I long for those days when you kids could just go out and play. And right. You know what? He was like, yeah, I'll be back at some point. I know that all of your friends were just eaten by piranhas, but cool. I'll be back. And then he doesn't even go back for her. She just magically shows up downstream at the resort, walking around. She's like the adult in charge. And you still get this sense that, you know, yeah, there's some stuff going on, but she's going to be okay. That's a kid of the 70s.
That's right.
Know. Yes.
Exactly. So, yeah, we have a thumbs up. And there's a nod to pollution in the film. My favorite line might have been, oh, yeah, the way they killed or tried to kill the piranhas was to dump waste from the smelting factory on them. And then, yeah, the line is, quote, we'll pollute the bastards to death. So a little nod to 70s anti-pollution.
So I know two of us, I don't think you watched the 1995 remake. Did you, Gwen?
I did not watch the remake.
Okay. Because I know Dawn and I did.
Quickly.
Yeah.
That's okay. I'm okay.
There are some weird changes. So it's basically the same script.
Yeah.
But there are slight changes. And I thought it was really interesting, like in the beginning when the two kids find the military installation. In the 1978 version, it's very much the dude who's like cajoling the girl to go in. And that's very much reversed in the 1995 version. And there's no reason for it that I could see. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then also, I guess the biggest change would be that Dr. Robert Hoke, is now Dr. Letitia Baines. And I thought,
a woman,
yes. And I thought that was kind of cool because that changes the fight sequence and sort of the visuals of how that looks to have two women and a man fighting versus two men and a woman. It played very differently. It played a lot campier, at least I thought. You might disagree with me. I don't know. But the reason that everybody should watch this movie is that Maggie and Paul are played by Alexandra Paul and William Catt. Who, at the very same time, wait for it, were starring in the Perry Mason made-for-TV movies.
Oh.
And they played the exact same characters.
Really?
And I swear.
So they played it, they were in those together?
Yes.
I didn't know.
And they were sort of like a team for about 5 episodes. Yes, I know. Gwen is like giving me such a look. But it is true. But literally, they played the same characters, which I thought was so weird. And there's even a fight sequence in the Perry Mason movies that looks identical to the Piranha 1995. That's how much I know about Perry Mason, y'all.
I was too busy dancing in the woods at a rave. I missed those movies.
You missed Perry Mason.
Yeah, I missed Perry Mason.
That pretty much does sum up the difference between us. So that's why I would recommend it, but for no other reason.
I liked it for two reasons. One of them was Maggie, and I'm surprised you didn't like it more for this reason, Liz, because you've written about the remake of Night of the Living Dead from 1990. Maggie actually, and she's from 95. She really reminded me of Barbara from the remake of Night of the Living Dead. Like she's the like 90s kick-ass, but always business type woman with short hair.
That's true.
Maggie in 1978 is a typical 70s woman, young woman. Maggie is like always wears lipstick, short hair.
Yeah.
But masculine looking clothes. Like, she's the career woman of the 90s. The one that was going to, she was more likely to be killed by a terrorist than get married.
That's right.
Are you saying that this one is a parody?
I would say it felt more like it had parody elements to me.
Or it's just kind of campy in general.
I always campier. Felt it was more serious.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I thought it was, like, translating the Piranha narrative for the 90s. You know, we have the professional woman. In fact, Maggie at one point says, and I think she says it to Paul. Yeah, she does. Paul says to her something like, you're a private and you're a PI. Like, I usually expect PIs to wear trench coats or something like that. And she says, it's the 90s. We've become liberated. So definitely translated to the 90s. And it just seems more serious and less fun than the 70s version, in my view.
I didn't see it as fun, but I definitely did see it as campy. Although what you say about the female characters, I think, is particularly true and also supported by the fact that they did make that gender switch for the scientist.
The scientist was a woman. Yeah. The bossy camp counselor who's trying to get, is this the one that, this is the one with Mila Kunis.
Right, as a little kid. I was like, what?
Trying to get her to swim is a woman. So there's lots of strong women imported in here. I also thought that the focus on the camera, I mean, this is 1 year before Scream, really shows that, like, our culture has become self-reflexive. Like, we all live through horror movies, movies of any kind, romantic comedies, whatever. The camera was really present in the 95 Piranha, more so than in the 78. And in fact, we talked earlier about Maggie's busting out of the jail cell. In 78, she heard it from an actual person. In 95, she saw it in a movie.
That's right.
So it's like we're living our lives more through TV and movies in the mid-90s.
Wow, you just offered like really serious criticism of 1995's Piranha. I was like not prepared for that.
That was super legit.
I know. I might have to go back and rewatch it now.
But there's still no claymation fish?
I mean, all I saw was like, Perry Mason. That was really all I got.
You were just blinded.
I was. I was so gleeful.
You could not wait to talk about that.
I really couldn't.
And we have the Vietnam War translated to, the military wanted to destroy the river systems in, of course, Russia and Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
And then the Cold War ended. So, yeah, there was some interesting changes in 95 that I think makes it an interesting cultural document if you're a Piranha fan. So, yeah, which one was next?
Would be the Piranha 2, The Spawning from 1982. And now this sequel takes place at a Caribbean island resort where people are trying to have sex and they get eaten by a mutant strain of piranha. And unfortunately, I thought it was not as interesting as that description would led me to believe that it was going to be.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
this was bad.
This was really bad.
I would put this at the bottom of your piranha list.
I would too.
Yeah. This is I bowed out of this one. I was too busy watching Piranaconda.
Oh, we're gonna get there.
Yeah, I know. I got too excited about those films.
Haven't seen Piranaconda, but my guess is it's better than Piranha 2, The Spawning.
I don't even know what I would say about Piranha 2. To me, it was instantly forgettable.
Yeah,
I thought the performances were horrible. It wasn't even there was like not enough gratuitous nudity. There was nothing to make it at least interesting. Nothing.
I think one of its remarkable qualities may be that it introduced the breast to the Piranha franchise.
That was so well put.
Wasn't this the first one where we do see a shot of a breast underwater as the Piranha attacking?
Oh, no. We see in 78 when she's...
When she gets undressed before she jumps into the
pool. Yeah. You get...
Oh, really?
Sort of
that see breasts.
I think so.
Yeah, she takes her top off. Her underwear start to fall down and she pulls them back up and then dives in.
You're like a connoisseur of nudity over here. This is amazing.
So why are you looking at me, man?
All right, well, I'll take your word for it. But okay, she's not getting attacked then?
No, just when she's saying, hey, let's dive in.
Yeah. I mean, I think in Piranha 2, The Spawning, you see breasts underwater while the piranha are attacking.
Yeah.
Pretty horrible race representations in Piranha 2. I mean, it's set, I think it was filmed somewhere in Jamaica. But yeah, we have a lot of people of color getting just completely non-entities as characters and there to get killed by the piranha.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, just boring. And it was directed by James Cameron, people.
I mean, that doesn't really surprise me.
2 years before Terminator.
I didn't even like Titanic.
Well,
I'll never get that time of my life back.
No.
Well, you're lucky you didn't waste another two on that. or 80 minutes. But I guess James Cameron at one point said something like his first feature-length directorial film was Terminator. Even he did not want to admit that it was actually Piranha 2, The Spawning 2 years before.
That's funny.
Busted, James.
I mean, is there anything really to say about it other than that?
I think we can move to the good stuff.
You did pick the best one to skip.
I guess the only thing I would say is that we seem to have moved a little bit from the military to just the science here. Like there's a fleeting reference to the fact that these piranhas were originally about screwing up the rivers in Vietnam, military. Here, it just seems to be like scientists splicing different kinds of fish together.
And you know, I think through the rest of the franchise,
they drop that all.
The causation really just goes away. Yeah. They all just become these prehistoric fish that, in order to survive in deep caverns, ate each other.
Right. Yeah. But that also coincides with it moving toward explicitly like horror comedy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Utter exploitation.
It's good stuff. I love that she says utter because there's we start with a dying cow in Piranha 3 Double D.
But we haven't gotten there yet.
No, I know we haven't. But I mean, I just had to take the utter. I grab the bull by the horns. Utterly.
Utterly. But we can't skip over Piranha 3D, which is from 2010. And the way that starts is there's this weird sort of underwater tremor. And it releases this swarm of killer piranha. And that's pretty much it. It does start with Richard Dreyfuss in a little boat. So what a nice nod.
Thinking?
I don't know.
I feel like this one goes right back into Jaws. Yeah. Like, so if everything started out, you know, kind of on the back of Jaws and even with that Jaws video game, I mean, he's straight up in the same clothes.
Yeah, you know. He definitely is in on the joke.
In a little boat. He should have had a bigger boat.
Bigger boat.
He's either whistling or singing, Show Me the Way.
Yes.
That's right.
And actually, I didn't notice this. I think, it was in the director's commentary. He's drinking Amity beer.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah. I missed that.
So it's, totally we are in Jaws territory here. And the fact that we get Jaws evoked, I think, more clearly than in the earlier piranhas connects to the fact that the piranha here are just released. Like, they're just fish. There's no human intervention. Right. And that makes it kind of like Jaws. Yeah, they're just prehistoric fish that get released through, like you said, some freak earthquake.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty interesting. Like, with this movie particularly, like, this was the first one in the Piranha franchise where I actually thought, okay, that's a good, scary, like, legitimately scary moment when, like, Sam is underwater. And he's sort of swimming in the cave. And then all of a sudden he turns on the light and the piranhas are all surrounding him and then they attack. Like that actually felt legitimately creepy to me, which was funny because there's really not much to take seriously about 3D. I thought.
Oh, I figured that this whole film wasn't a perfect example of Darwinism. I mean, they couldn't have picked a better place to emerge than spring break on the lakes of Arizona.
Right.
Because bye, Felicia. That's all I could say to all those kids. Like,
so is that a thing, spring break in Arizona?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
But it is our first sort of move toward, like, older kids primarily. So you don't have the same empathy as seeing, like, a bunch of little kids, presumably. I mean, I was fine either way.
I was fine either way, but I was positively happy when the teenagers in Piranha 3D were getting eaten.
Same.
Yes.
It was just, it was joyful.
And it was fantastic. Eli Roth has his walk on there when he's,
oh, really?
He's like Captain Douche. Is he the radio guy? Like,
is
helping facilitate the party?
I think so,
like,
yes.
He's from the radio station or something like that? Yeah.
Hello.
And he has his walk on. He's just so dumb. And he gets just massacred.
It's funny that this is the one out of all the Piranha movies that people and fans seem to like the best,
really?
But it's also the hardest to find. Usually you can find,
it's,
you know, bootlegs.
Anywhere.
No, or it's
not
horror
on YouTube.
Movies. No, which I was surprised by because the other, like, the original Piranha's there.
But I gotta say, I'm also in love with this film because you have Elizabeth Shue in the film. And so I immediately
go, like,
babysitter,
adventures in babysitting. Like, it just evokes that whole film. And that's such a feel good film. And to see her kind of in that, you know, strong female role, like replacing like a Maggie type character, that made me so happy to have her there.
I
and there was just,
movie.
I mean, they had a lot of good people in the movie and it was just so funny.
But I made the mistake of watching this after watching 3DD.
Yeah.
And
it just wasn't as good.
No, it's not.
It just
not even close.
I wish I had watched it in the right order because I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more because it is funny. I love Jerry O'Connell in that performance. He's so smarmy and gross. And
that's a good word.
I love the way he gets dealt with, I guess, and the visual of that. Like, it's really horrific and gross.
And it evokes the original film when the old guy down the lane gets his feet bit off.
Absolutely.
Well, which guy are we talking about here?
He was the one who is sort of the director of the Girls Gone Wild spinoff.
Oh, the one who loses his penis?
Yes, that would be him.
Well, before you guys say more about how much you loved it, I have to say something about why I hated it.
She came out of the blue with that one. So you hated 3D?
Yeah, I did. The film itself, like,
well, no, that doesn't surprise me because I know this isn't your favorite type of horror.
No, it's not.
I mean, just to be clear, you guys, it was not.
An interesting moment, but I just like, I hated everyone in this film. And I know it was supposed to be funny, but I couldn't get over my disgust with them and with everything that was going on. I mean, I guess they were playing on the whole Girls Gone Wild thing. That I guess that was a thing back in the 2000s, right?
Yeah. You even hated the poor little children?
I hated the children. Oh, yeah, I love it. I mean, I really hated everything about it because, you know, like in Piranha and even Piranha 2, The Spawning, like people had higher aspirations in life. Like they wanted to find people. They had jobs. There was science. You know,
yeah, you didn't get any of that.
Yeah, 70s kids wouldn't have gotten stuck on that island either. Hell, they would have found a way to get off. They would have built something. Yeah,
they would have built a raft better
than
what
they
were
building. Yeah, they would have gone Gilligan's Island, professor, rub some coconuts together. I don't know. Well, there's a lot of coconuts rubbing together in this film. But...
yeah.
Although, I have to say.
I mean, I'm literally looking at the quote that says, beer, sun, and naked honeys making out under the water.
like that's good. But...
I can't even contain my glee.
But I have to say, like, that one scene where you see, like, the glass bottom of the boat and, like, the girls and they're doing, like, this water ballet.
That was so peculiar.
It was so peculiar because it wasn't, it didn't feel, like, exploitative to me as much as it did.
Underwater aria. It was, like.
Yeah, it seemed very removed from, like, the girls out on the beach with, like, everything out. And
I wonder if that was a Creature from the Black Lagoon reference.
I thought it was.
I thought it at the time. But that's obviously been running through the franchise. But yeah, it's two naked girls. I just hated them so much. I just, it didn't seem beautiful. I mean, they were despicable characters.
Yeah.
I would have rather seen the Creature from the Black Lagoon and the woman.
It does raise an interesting question, though, about like exploitation, because you're right. Like that was the focus of this. So if you have Girls Gone Wild happening, and that's where the culture's at, then is there such a thing as exploitation anymore? Because
the culture is exploitation.
Right. It's so,
like, yeah, I mean, that's why I hated it. Like, in Piranha and Piranha 2, they cared about the environment. They cared about pollution. They cared about, like,
exposing these kids were throwing stuff into the water left and right. Because that's what they were getting. Deputy Fallon was like, go pick up that trash because they're just throwing stuff.
Heedless millennials or something. It's like, eat them all.
Eat them all. That should be the title of this. Just eat them all.
Eat them all. Yeah. I'm going to jot that down right now.
But there were more breasts than I've seen in a movie in a long time in Piranha 3D.
I didn't think there were that many breasts, actually. I was a little disappointed. So I don't know what I'm watching, but apparently.
Yeah, we're definitely watching different things.
I think maybe.
No, but there was definitely a lot of references to wet. I mean, dying to get wet. Yeah, it did start to really grow.
Yeah, that's where that burgeoned. The wet motif. Someone should write a paper on that.
It's a dissertation idea for somebody out there. You are welcome.
And even too, like, just speaking to like the types of people, once the piranhas really started to hone in on the kids that were closer to shore, you know, one kid finally gets into a boat and he just starts mowing over other dying people.
See, that's it is typical of young people in this film.
I agree it is. Like, it felt like I loved to hate them all.
Yeah.
And I just reveled in everybody dying. Same. I mean, I kind of like everybody dying anyway in most of my films, but I mean, I really loved them dying in this film.
I mean, it's really interesting that you mentioned that scene because that really struck me. Like in the earlier Piranhas from the 70s, 80s, even the 90s.
You would never see that.
People were going out and trying to save people.
The little girl that's scared of the water is trying to drag a canoe five times her size out into the water to save her camp counselors. Although she did just row on past everybody else, the other kids. She's like, yeah, you're cool, but let me get to my counselor. But yeah, you're right. like a yeah, clear difference.
Yeah, this kid just like was, he was literally churning people up with his motor.
Yes. It was evident.
It was amazing.
That they were bumping over people. Yep. Like,
young people today.
Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. Oh my gosh. Does that bring us? Dare I say it?
I don't know. No? I feel like you have to talk about Ving. Like,
that's
your homeboy. That's your homeboy.
I cannot wait.
Like, you love him.
I love him. He can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned. He makes every movie better.
Yeah, I loved his character in this one. I loved it even more in 3DD, but.
I do believe that was the very first quote I said to you. Like, did I call you and be like,
yeah,
bring me my legs.
And they had some good kill scenes in Piranha 3D. So when it ends, too, you know, we have this realization, oh, wait, these weren't the scary piranhas?
Right.
These are just the babies?
Yeah.
Where's That's the true. Mom? And then, boom, gets Parks and Recreation guy. And
Loved
I said,
it.
Like, straight up, it was just, like, out of deep blue sea. I mean, it was coming up out of the water. And that was a great way to end a film.
Yeah, because I was laughing on the way
Me
out.
Too.
Yeah.
I mean, are we not going to talk about the penis scene then? Because that, I thought that was pretty, that was the funniest part of the film.
They took my penis.
Yeah, that was funny. But what I loved was the fact that they weren't content with just having that.
Yes, this is true.
She's going to the data. You know,
then we go underwater. I just want to make sure I'm in
drop.
The right film. Yeah, the piranha drops the penis and it kind of floats in our faces for a little while.
Yeah.
If we were only watching this in 3D. And then two piranhas come up and fight over it. One of them gets it.
You're making me love it even more.
I know.
And then regurgitates it back into our faces.
I think.
Making us wish yet again we had our 3D glasses.
Yes. I actually saw this movie in the movie theater with 3D glasses.
Oh,
yes.
God.
So I had seen this before 3DD. And like I said, I loved it. And then I saw 3DD and all of a sudden everything paled in comparison. But I did see that. All in 3D. It was fantastic. But I think it's even better when you just narrate it back to me. Like, I love it even more.
It was. I mean, I said to the screen, I was like, you have got to be kidding.
And
when
then
it came back at us.
She's probably cursing us.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm doing this right now.
Who made me watch this?
I wish there was a way to show our reactions to this stuff, like, in real time at the same time.
Yes.
Because I think we have very different reactions. I thought it was great. I was like, oh my God, it keeps coming back.
Yeah.
It keeps
not even
coming
gonna get...
back. Eat them all.
Eat them all. Was this around the time of Lorena Bobbitt or is that?
Oh,
no,
it
that,
90s,
that preceded
it,
it, right?
Yeah, that was,
that was
90s.
90s. Yeah.
Yeah, this was made 2010.
Okay, there goes my one stab at social context.
Stab.
Bump, bump. I'm glad you get my puns.
Liz with her podcast puns. I've come to the conclusion that I just love comedy horror, and it's based on my scientific need for endorphins and dopamine. So this is my endorpho horror. I am coining that term.
Endorpho horror.
Yes.
I like that.
Because I think
I like
it just
that.
Doubles
nice.
Down on these neurotransmitters that just not only am I getting the reward center, but I'm also getting that fear and need for survival. And my body needs this.
It's
on
almost
many
like
levels.
You're working on a book on horror comedy. It's the weirdest thing.
I may be. And we may have to you know, coin that endorpho horror.
I think that's genius.
Yeah.
And you think there's like a double thing happening when it's funny, too?
Yes.
I mean, I almost felt that when the penis came back at us. In 3D.
I'm just going to isolate you saying that and make it my ringtone. It's just what's going to happen, FYI.
No, I think that, you know, pleasure and pain kind of go hand in hand, you know, both with the chemistry of the brain. It's on a continuum. And I think that especially when you have horror comedy, you've got that the tension and the stress of what may or may not happen, who's going to die and when. And, you know, you're living through it with them. And then just the roarous laughter and that comes along that you get different types of endorphins or different types of neurotransmitters kind of coursing through your body instead
Absolutely.
Of just one or two.
It's science.
It is. It's
it is.
It's biological. I need it. I told you. I need it. Stay alive. Or I'm just going to drink.
All right. So horror comedy it is.
Yes.
And it seems like there's no better example of that than Piranha 3DD.
Yeah. Now, you didn't see this one yet, did you?
No, I did see this one.
Oh, you did see this one.
And did you love it as much as we did?
No.
Oh.
I did love it.
Good.
No, I liked it.
I like that you immediately walked that back.
She dialed that back. You should set a timer on that.
I just fell on my note about David Hasselhoff, so I had to walk back to love to like.
Like, I fire-sticked this. Instantly, as soon as we talked about doing Piranha, you know, for our next podcast, I immediately skipped all the other legit Piranha films and went right to 3DD when Dawn found it and said, hey, guys, there's a 3DD. I was like, word?
I said that thinking, of course, we're not going to watch this one, right?
And I started with it.
Same.
Like that
I did
night.
Too.
In you're the so pervert.
Yeah, I know. And then I immediately called Liz at home, well past her bedtime, probably.
Yes, which is 9 o'clock.
Like, I was like, I know she had her doilies on.
I did.
I don't know. And her chamomile. I don't know.
You were like, you have to get up and watch this now.
She's like, hold on, I'm feeding the cats. No.
I think I really was. But I did watch it immediately.
I was like, you have to watch this now. I said, if not only just for David Hasselhoff, because of the lines that he has in this film, the gratuitous kills that go in the film. I mean, so you go from Piranha 3D, where somebody gets sliced in half just from a string that gets knocked down, you know, and it, you know, it slices their torso. It's gory. It's fun. And then we go to 3DD. And you have somebody that's just checking out a woman's breasts. And as he's doing it, slices his head right off. Boom. Like,
that'll teach up.
Yeah.
I think you called me and you said, this is like an amazing movie. You have to watch it immediately. So I, of course, hopped onto YouTube because I do what you tell me to do. And I watched the trailer. And as soon as Ving Rhames says with dead straight face, bring me my legs.
Which are guns, guys.
Which are guns.
Like,
which
if
are
you
guns.
Haven't seen it, he has, like, titanium legs because he was attacked in 3D, if you haven't watched that one. And now he's got a titanium leg and, like, a gun leg.
It's so glorious.
Which is kind of, that's what happened. Rose McGowan, what was that film that she was in?
Oh,
she has
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I feel like he does it better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
So, yeah,
everything.
And then you have the Hoff. I mean, he comes in as a lifeguard character to help open up this place.
Let's just start, though, at the beginning, because you don't you want to make sure
I'm so excited.
You give Gary Busey and Clue Gulager their due.
Agreed. Okay. Yeah.
Because any movie that starts with the two of them.
To my dead cow.
And a farting dead cow.
A farting dead cow. Like, my super academic notes say, OMG, it starts with Gary Busey, cow farts, and explosions. That's my first note.
And I ask you, what more do you demand in a movie?
I mean, how else do piranhas reemerge other than from exploding cow farts?
Exactly.
With Gary Busey at the helm.
But I like that it's Gary Busey, like, really trying to put his best acting foot forward and taking it so seriously.
Yeah. And then he bites the head off that piranha and spits it back out at you.
He rips it. Oh, that's so good. It's so good. And I also have to say that this is a film that is directed by John Gulager. And it was bothering me for the longest time. I'm like, why do I know that name? Why do I know that name? Did you guys watch Project Greenlight?
No.
Okay. So it's this weird HBO reality show where.
Oh, then I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh,
I did.
Okay. I like that description.
Well, did you or didn't you?
Because I was thinking that you were referring to a movie, but no. When you
it
was a reality show, yeah, I remember watching
that. He's the winner of season one. So it's Matt Damon.
This is what he made?
No.
Oh.
He made another movie entirely and clearly got his chops in order because this is a dare I say, masterpiece.
Yeah, this is.
I think this is the best undersea movie
I said that this
ever.
Is, I mean, this is the equivalent
so
of, like,
much.
You know, Beethoven's Fifth to me. I mean, I just feel
it's true
that this is something to be remembered.
It frightens me that we are so on the same page with this movie, but oh my God.
And they bring the wet early also, just like the original film.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they open up the big wet water park with water certified strippers.
Because of course.
Yeah. That's more legit.
And then we have the great scene of the one guy, like, humping the water nozzle, I guess. And I don't understand.
If you guys could see her hand gestures right now, yeah, that's going in a whole direction.
I'm just saying the moments that stuck out to me, okay?
Now, did you hate the kids in this film as much as you did the 3D?
No, I didn't.
Because they were somewhat redeemable. They were kind of normal. Yeah.
The main girl, Maddie, was not someone I hated.
No, I agree. I liked her.
She was a marine biologist, don't forget.
She was.
I think she was a graduate student, actually.
Yeah, she was.
She was.
Back from graduate school.
Yes.
Marine biology and...
49% owner of this water park.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. She's a business owner, businesswoman. The reason I liked her was because... Like, she walked into this insane, crazy water park with the adult-only section and the water strippers. And she was like, the hell? So she actually has kind of a moral compass.
So you identified with that.
That was her reaction, which is good. I don't think it was mine. I was like, what else am I going to see? This is great. We probably should give a little synopsis, though, right?
Why don't you do that?
People who haven't seen it. Is it Maggie or Maddie? I'm not sure.
Maddie.
Okay. Yeah. So is a marine biology student.
Why?
On holiday from school, and she returns home to her family-run water park to find out that her stepfather has turned it into. Basically like a Girls Gone Wild oasis, but like on crack because it's way more extreme than that. But unfortunately, there are a school of killer piranhas who are on their way to the grand opening of said water park.
Yep.
Is that accurate?
That's a good description.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really all the plot there is. So.
But I thought there was I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I thought there was some social... like subtext to this movie.
I'm not sure if I can go there. The fact that
like in the beginning there's the two characters, like she's about to have sex. It is such like a classic horror trope, right?
In the van.
Yeah. Yeah. And anytime that characters in this movie try to have sex, something horrible happens. Like
that's
you have in
true.
The beginning,
she gets
consumed by all the piranhas. And then you have my favorite, when Shelby has a piranha enter her vagina.
Yeah.
And then she's trying to have sex with Josh, and he's not listening to her, saying, it hurts, stop. He keeps going. Then the piranha totally gets his penis, and it is everything that it sounds like it would be.
And she felt so remorseful. She's like, Josh cut off his penis because something came out of my vagina.
Yeah.
Like, I wrote that down.
Something came out of my vagina.
That was a fantastic
origin story.
Origin story.
Josh cut off his penis because something came out of my vagina.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just watch it for that.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
And then I think shortly after that, David Hasselhoff walks in and he says, welcome to rock bottom. And I think that sentiment kind of
can we talk about the wonder that is David Hasselhoff?
The slow
and
run.
I won't stand for anyone Hasselhoff the Hoff.
Slow run. Like he had, like, I think there was more boobs on him. Like that slow jiggle was just
glorious.
Great.
It just didn't last long enough because, as he said, I'm a little too old for this. And so he stops before he's barely got started.
It just made me so happy. Honestly, this was like a return to horror films being so exploitative and so ridiculously gory for no good reason. And it was just so fun.
Yeah.
And it's been a hot minute since I can honestly say that I watched a horror film and just had fun.
Yeah. And I just, you know, we talked earlier about the line that David Hasselhoff has. But it is kind of like
the gingers.
Sometimes you just want to scream at the screen, you know, when you're saying, don't go upstairs, you idiot.
Right.
Like, stop, you know, trying to get in the car. It's not going to work. And he just says, I'm not a lifeguard. Never was. Once these idiots get out of the water, it's not like the fish are going to follow you. Like, and then he looks at the little ginger kid. And
that
he
was
says,
amazing.
You got back in the water, you little ginger moron.
Yeah.
Which was comedy gold.
Yep.
Like, I want to call everybody a little ginger moron after this film. And what do you think about this kid, Barry? The kid that's in love with Maddie. Because that was kind of a new addition.
Yeah,
like,
that's
you didn't
true.
Really see anything. Well, I guess you started to see it in Piranha 3D.
The one
like,
she thought was gay.
Yeah.
Who wore the suit of something.
Yeah,
some
he wore the shark suit.
The shark. Yeah. Oh, another
Jaws. Yeah, and then Jaws reference.
Yeah.
That could be the only Jaws reference in this film.
Yeah, although there was a Nightmare on Elm Street reference when they're in the bathtub.
Yes. I actually loved it.
It was like the glove coming, like cutting through between her legs. It was well played.
That was actually one of my favorite scenes when, Maddie's in the tub in the Nightmare on Elm Street pose and It's pretty horrifying. Like, little piranhas drop out of the faucet.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, oh, they're doing that.
It was right around 42 minutes, guys, if you watch it.
I mean, that was horrible.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
I mean, it was very creepy. And I guess it was funny at the same time. But very creepy.
Yeah.
But yet the piranha didn't get in her vagina. Now there's a whole hole in the plot.
Now I'm forgetting. How did the piranha...
A dream. Because then she has.
Yes, you're right.
Then they start dropping out of the faucet.
Yeah.
With those little plopping sounds. Like multitudes of them. And then she wakes up. Because I was thinking that too. I was like, that's where they're heading. Straight between her legs.
Oh, and we can't forget Christopher Lloyd's in this film.
Oh, as he is 3D.
Yeah. Yeah. We forgot about him.
Who is he?
Like Back to the Future. The scientist.
Oh, that's where he's from. Back to the Future.
So I think that just legitimizes his role as a scientist.
Well, and he wrote perhaps one of the most intriguing sounding books I've heard of, The Fish Walk Among Us.
That's right.
That was the title of his book.
Yes.
I mean, I want to read that.
I do. I do.
That's another reference to Creature from the Black Lagoon, actually. Mm-hmm. Pretty subtle, because I think, isn't one of the sequels called The Creature Walks Among Us or something? Like maybe the third film in the trilogy? So here, The Fish Walk Among Us.
And I guess this is the only reason that I can understand why there was a walking claymation fish in Piranha, 1978.
There you go. You might have answered your own question.
I could have. Piranha 3DD gives me so many answers.
It gives me life. I like the fact that it was so gratuitous.
Me too.
And the fact that there's just nudity everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And it's supposed to be salacious and it's supposed to be stupid and funny and... I don't have a problem with that in horror. And I know a lot of women who like horror who do have issues with that. And I understand where they're coming from. But for me, it's part of the fun of the genre. Like,
I thought there was more gratuitous nakedness in Piranha 3D.
I think you're right, too. Like, there was a bunch of breasts.
The
glass in that one.
Despite the title, 3DD.
Yeah.
I think there were actually fewer.
I don't know.
I don't think so. I lied because they had the underwater cam.
Yeah.
In the water park.
I feel like Double D was the one that gave us more bang for our buck.
See, I feel like
Piranha
D3DD had a little bit more of the vajayjays.
It was called
a lot more vajayjays.
The cooch cam.
Yeah.
And
that's right.
I thought it was a little underused, actually.
I agree. I mean, considering what it was there for.
Yeah, it was a little underused.
Yeah.
Maybe I was going to the bathroom or something.
Because I did feel like there was a lot more covered breasts in... 3D, Double D.
I feel like there was not as much in 3D.
Like when he...
You know what this means. We're going to have to go back and like create a study that compares and contrasts.
Absolutely.
More dissertation topics.
More dissertation topics.
Absolutely. I mean, frequency, intensity, duration. I mean, this is real science. Real science.
You don't think... Now, this is a serious question. And this goes back to your social commentary, Liz. Like, you don't think that... There's something kind of punitive in Piranha 3DD then with it. I mean, you're the one that brought it up, right?
Yeah.
The middle scene where they're having sex. Well, they have sex at the beginning and die.
Yeah.
And then Shelby and Josh in the middle and the piranha attaches itself to his penis, which was pretty hilarious, but also just not seems to be warning people against having sex. I know I'm reading pretty deep into that scene to get that message, but
that honestly, like when I finished the movie and was thinking about it, I was like, this is really an advocacy for virginity. I mean, it really was pretty explicitly set in how the characters are dealt with.
Yeah. And Shelby's actually a virgin.
Yeah.
And she's like, I need to have sex now. And then look what happened.
Nothing
unless
good,
you're,
kid.
Unless you're
Nothing
viewing
good.
The film.
So have we thrashed through all of Piranha DD's very many meanings?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a lot of meaning in it, but I do bring up the point, too. Like, I don't feel like I'm a bad feminist for loving it.
No, not at all.
I don't feel any guilt whatsoever.
No, I felt just joy.
And again, different strokes for different folks. Like, I don't fault anybody that feels differently.
Exactly.
But really loved this.
I did too.
This is like, so if I'm going to rate the Piranha films, this is my number one.
Okay. Oh, it's my number one by a landslide.
Yeah.
Woo! You like 78.
Yeah.
Yeah.
78 is my favorite, but I would put 3DD third.
After 3D?
Hey, that's good.
After 3D?
No.
I mean, that was the natural progression
in my 95, I bet.
Piranha 78, Piranha 95. Because it's a remake of 78.
You made a really good case for 95, though.
I would boot 95 to my number two based on that case. Well, of the five official, because we're going to have one more to talk about.
Oh, I know.
Oh, yeah. The Anaconda one. I just said 3D will be at the bottom of any list ever, just because
even more than the Spawning?
Despicable. Yeah, even more than the Spawning.
She'd rather be bored.
I'd rather be bored than jerky
kids.
With the Girls Gone Wild crew and their,
I enjoyed them. But that does bring us to our unofficial Piranha entry from 2012, Piranaconda.
Piranaconda. And I didn't finish this, so I just have to remind you because I fell asleep.
To our viewers out there.
Well, I watched the whole thing.
And I didn't fall asleep.
And I delighted in every single minute. But I'm going to start it off and I'm going to insert it right here so that everyone can have an opportunity to enjoy the theme song that ushers in this fabulous movie. Okay, so that gives you guys a taste of what Piranaconda is all about. Gwen.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about Piranaconda, which I don't want to stop saying?
Well, I really, really, really enjoyed this film because it just had kill after kill after kill after kill.
Exactly.
And there was no rhyme or reason for it. It's not like anybody was doing anything terrible. It's not like it was cautionary. It was just kill them all.
Yeah, and you got to know... Nobody? None of the characters. Okay. Like, it doesn't even matter, really, who they were or what they were about.
And then I was immediately struck by the fact that I had some of my familiar faces from Shark and Saw Women's Prison Massacre.
It was made for you.
Because it was the same director, and that made me just grow my appreciation for the film.
Yes.
So...
But here's a little synopsis for those of you who have not seen it. And if you have not, you should remedy that quickly. Basically, a scientist steals a piranaconda egg and mama and papa come in search of that egg and just basically lay waste to every human being. And there's like some gun traders and there's a film that's also being shot on the islands. And whenever people die, they just become this like red mist. It's great. Oh,
it's supposed to be set in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And there's supposed to be this legendary creature that may or may not have, you know, been a part of the local lore. And they just called it the giant snake. But
Piranaconda is dope looking as a monster.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far.
Oh, I would.
I think you need to back up in your plot summary of this. You start with there's a piranaconda egg.
Yes.
Now, that seems to me to need a little explaining.
But the film gives you nothing.
Okay. No.
Literally, the first five minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say that was within the first, I was going to say maybe 10, but yeah.
Yeah.
So we never know where this piranaconda came from?
Oh, it doesn't really matter.
No, over time, like I said, they just kind of allude to the fact that
it's evolution,
the villagers have always talked about this type of thing. It's never really been legitimized. And then, like Nessie, there was a sighting one day recently. Yeah. And then we're just kind of introduced to the film when that... I didn't take any notes on this because I just wanted to watch it. And there was some pretty big names in it. You got Rachel Hunter in it.
I like that that constitutes a big name.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
I just know her as Rod Stewart's ex-wife.
Well, yeah. That's a pretty big deal.
Sorry.
I don't know. But you have this scientist just in search. And at that time, I didn't know if he was part of the movie that was being filmed, if he was just a random scientist. But yeah, so he's just going in search of this egg. And they just kind of, within the first couple minutes of the film, are walking. And he's like, oops, oh, there's a whole nest of piranaconda eggs. And then just reaches over, grabs it, stuffs it in a jar, closes it. And then he gets captured by terrorists.
Yeah, as one does.
So is there social commentary there?
terrorism? Not in the slightest.
No.
I guess maybe
if you can't find it, then it's probably not there. Right?
No, there probably is, actually. Like, the fact that you have somebody going into, like, this other culture and stealing something from it.
Oh, I was going to say.
Well, like, no, but it's based on, like, the whole, I mean, we're talking about Piranaconda, so I don't know that it's our Hawaii.
I was going to say, it's not, like, war-torn, like, Central America.
But they do make a point of saying, like, there's this mythology, and the natives, quote, unquote, say this.
I know. The natives, as they're all driving around town in their BMWs and flip-flops, like, I can't.
But just that whole idea of taking something like that and then trying to profit off of it, because he's like, I'm going to bring it back and I'm going to be such a well-known scientist.
Which
and
is
I'm
actually no different than what the terrorist does. Yeah.
It's no different than the way a lot of, like, anthropology has evolved over the years either. You know what I mean? So, yes, there is subtext.
Definitely.
We will always find it. No trauma, though.
No.
A little disappointed by that.
No.
So you didn't finish it. So the ending is great because you think you've reached that moment where two characters have survived. And just as they're kissing and making plans for the future, a new Piranaconda comes from out of the blue and just, like, eats them both. And that's how it ends.
That's
and then
fantastic.
You go back to the song again,
that,
and I'm like, this
like
is great.
It captures the spirit of the Piranha franchise.
For
in
sure.
That ending.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it does have, like, official franchise DNA, because this was produced by Robert Corman, who produced the first.
Roger.
Roger. Roger Corman.
Sorry, Roger.
Don't come for me, horror people. Roger Corman, I know this.
And you said Roger earlier, which is the only way I know this.
But the deaths are very different in this, because you don't have a swarming beast anymore.
No.
You now just have this giant snakefish.
But he moves
and
on land, man.
He does. And he has this weird, like, predator vision sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I just feel like he hones in on people.
But as a movie monster, I think the Piranaconda is really, really good. First of all, it looks kind of creepy.
You cannot escape him.
You can't
There's
escape
no way.
Him.
You can't outrun him.
And it's like an empathetic character, too, because I was rooting for the Piranaconda.
Which is interesting, too, because you have these two dueling movie monsters going on at the same time, because you have them filming that slasher film.
Exactly.
And you have your very, very typical slow walking kind of Jason character.
Yeah.
As the horror movie monster. And, you know, the girl's running away from him, scene after scene. She's running away from him.
Losing clothes.
Away. Yeah, losing clothes.
Because you always do that when you're running.
Absolutely.
In horror films.
Yes. It makes you faster.
That's right.
Streamlined.
Aerodynamic.
And then it's contrasted by these kills of the Piranaconda, who just can sometimes either circle his victim, and there's no way you can get out of that because he's just huge. Or he slinks through the jungle just effortlessly that you can't outrun him, or just out of nowhere, boom, dead.
So good.
So there's no swarming monster. You can't get away from him.
So where would you guys put this in the Piranha ranking?
For me, three. So I'm double D, and then I'm 3D, and then I'm Piranaconda.
Whoa.
I think I'm double D, Piranaconda, 3D.
Whoa, second.
Yeah, 3D. And then I'm going to go into 95 because you've converted me.
Okay.
I'm going to rewatch that
you
with that frame of reference.
Still so weird.
That's the quote you're going to isolate.
I mean, true.
So true. Yeah.
We like what we like.
Yeah. But again, this is also going to feed into, because we're going to do a podcast on exploitation horror.
Yes.
And I think that everything that we've talked about today with 3D, 3DD, and Piranaconda
definitely
easily feeds in to some of the films, or at least some of the films that'll be on our list. I was going to say a couple of them.
Yeah. I mean, Piranaconda is kind of interesting, if only for the fact it really does sort of go all in on exploitation in terms of it being sort of a lurid film that's also, it is completely
it is
a B movie.
Okay.
And it knows what it is. Whereas I think with double D, that to me reads as like a complete parody.
I'll give you that. I'll give
so
you that.
That's, I think, slight interesting difference.
Yeah, because you asked if you thought some of the earlier films were parodies, like 78 and 95. Piranha 3DD is parody.
Oh, yes.
It is parody real
hard. Hands down.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And yet it still has some good horror scenes. So.
I might have to change my first name legally to Gwendolyn, spelled with two D's now.
Oh, yes. Gwendolyn double D.
And on that note, so is everybody happy that they watched these Piranha movies?
Yes.
Yes.
I am, too.
It was fun. It's a good, fun summertime.
Yeah.
This is not elevated horror, y'all. No. But it is worth watching.
I wanted to get that in at some point with all this talk about elevated horror. This is not.
Yeah,
that.
I agree with you.
No, so not even a little bit. So those are our thoughts on the Piranha franchise, plus Piranaconda. Had to say it one more time. Please follow us on all social media at Horror Homeroom, and we will talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.